Good morning, everyone. Welcome to CITR 101.9 FM radio. My name is Jack Campbell, and you're listening to Breaking Barriers with Jack Campbell, live Thursdays at 10 a.m., and broadcasting from the traditional, unceded, and ancestral territory of the Musqueam First Nations people. I'm so happy to be back as your host after last week's brief interruption in programming. And today's episode is very special to me. It's a topic most close to my heart, and one that I think is incredibly interesting when you look at the general scope of how music has evolved over the last 500 years. But if you're new to Breaking Barriers, you'll know that this show focuses on music across all genres of the 20th century. So we're going to focus in on music from across that period that is multidimensional and multi-genre. Now, the topic in question today is ballet scores. Now, when you think of a ballet score, you probably think of something like this. That's the iconic Swan's theme from Tchaikovsky's Swan Lake Ballet, one of the most commonly played pieces in the entire ballet repertoire. And through this following piece from another one of his brilliant ballets, you'll hear one of the most recognizable melodies in the entirety of the classical music canon. Of course, that was the brilliant Waltz of the Sugar Plum Fairy by Tchaikovsky from the Nutcracker Ballet, which everybody knows and loves. Now, in the next 50 years from when that was written, music would undergo a vast revolution with the dawn of late Romanticism, with the music of Strauss and Mahler, and the birth of 12-tone music through the Second Viennese School of Schönberg, Webern, and Berg, as well as the rise of French Impressionist music, such as that of Debussy, Ravel, and Satie. Now, that music in its orchestration is very much influenced by Tchaikovsky, as some at the time and still today considered him the master of orchestration and understanding the idiosyncrasies of each instrument in the orchestra. Now, I'm about to play for you music that will sound strikingly different from that which you've just heard, but in the lushness and in the drama and in the intervallic and harmonic beauty of it, you will see the similarities to the Tchaikovsky we just listened to. This is one of my favorite pieces, Debussy's Je. Now, Je was commissioned by the great Russian choreographer and ballet impresario, Sergei Diaghilev. Now, Diaghilev was part of the circle of Parisian artists in the early portions of the 20th century that consisted of Stravinsky, Picasso, Debussy, Ravel, Diaghilev himself, and then later American writers such as Gertrude Stein or Ernest Hemingway, and the Irish novelist James Joyce. Now, although all of these people didn't live in Paris at the same time, they interacted in a way which very much created the Parisian culture that was the mecca of the avant-garde at that point in the century. Now, Je is only written for three dancers, two women and one man, and it takes place over a 25-minute long game of tennis in which you can observe the emotions that these people are exchanging to one another through the music and through the physical actions. So this is a beautiful score from 1913. Now, this particular recording is by Pierre Boulez and the Philharmonia Orchestra. This is Debussy's Je. Well, with that brilliant climax in the middle of that piece, we come to the end of our listening to Je by Debussy. That was performed by Pierre Boulez and the Philharmonia Orchestra. Now, that piece is such a tremendous sense of wonder and elegance and drama and passion and just such a profound refinement in the way it's written in it. There's nothing extreme about that music, yet it covers all the extremes of human emotion. So now we're going to jump 35 years later to 1947, and we're going to listen to two works from 1947, the first of which is by Igor Stravinsky. Now, with that work of Debussy's being commissioned by Diaghilev, it's only fitting that the next should be George Balanchine, perhaps the century's next great ballet impresario, who's sometimes considered the father of the American ballet and founded the New York City Ballet and was its artistic director for more than 35 years. So this work is from 1947, and it's a score by Stravinsky for string orchestra. String orchestra, often considered by composers the hardest thing to compose for. And the brilliance of this score is within it, and it very much holds the qualities of the Debussy we were listening to that, and before that we heard some Tchaikovsky, and it's obvious when you hear Stravinsky's music that he certainly does know his Tchaikovsky and how he orchestrates and creates, that in the space of a few measures in this piece you will have heterophony and monophony and polyphony, and they will interact seamlessly, and that's very rare in music, and this is done ever so brilliantly. So, and also, as you may have guessed, it's based on the Greek myth of Orpheus. So here's actually the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra performing Stravinsky's Orpheus, written in 1947, composed in 1947, this recording from 1999, excuse me. Enjoy. That was the introduction to the first scene, and now we move to the air de danse. ¶¶ as we listen to this beautiful music, I just wanted to note that I think I may have said that this was a string orchestra, when in fact, as you can obviously hear, it is a chamber orchestra. And right now you can hear some brilliant flute playing and other woodwind instruments in conjunction with timpani, and the beginning also brilliantly features the harp. All right, please enjoy this vibrant air de danse by Stravinsky from Orpheus.
Thank you.
For those of you who are just tuning in, welcome back to Breaking Barriers with Jack Campbell, live Thursdays at 10 a.m., broadcasting from the traditional, unceded, and ancestral territory of the Musqueam First Nations people. You just finished listening to the first scene of the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra performing Stravinsky's ballet in three sections, Orpheus. Now, we've listened so far on this broadcast to music by Tchaikovsky as a taster of the ballet score before the 20th century, and then moved to Je by Debussy and Stravinsky's Orpheus. Now, with the Debussy that was commissioned by George Diaghilev, and then the Stravinsky by... that was funny of me. The Debussy was commissioned by Sergei Diaghilev, and the Stravinsky by Georges Balanchine. And now we move to the next great choreographer of the century, the American experimentalist Merce Cunningham. And this is a score he commissioned from who would later become his husband, John Cage. This piece is called The Seasons, and it is one of the first pieces in which Cage began to work with unusual forms, which I will discuss after the playing. What is interesting when you're listening to it is to think that this was also written in 1947, the same year as that Stravinsky. And it's so remarkably different and the differences are an interesting thing to consider while you listen. We're going to listen to the entirety of the ballet, as it is only 12 minutes long. Please enjoy The Seasons by John Cage. Hello, everyone, and for those of you who are just tuning in, welcome to Breaking Barriers with Jack Campbell, live Thursdays at 10 a.m. on CITR 101.9 FM radio, broadcasting live from the traditional, unceded, and ancestral territory of the Musqueam First Nations people. Now, we just heard John Cage's The Seasons Ballet. Now, a fun fact about The Seasons, which is a ballet in one act, is that there was another historical precedent for a ballet in one act called The Seasons by Alexander Glazunov, the Russian composer who kind of is part of the school of sort of five composers along with Nicholas Rimsky-Korsakov and Modest Mussorgsky that sort of determine late Romanticism in Russia post-Tchaikovsky. And the movements of this ballet even have the same titles. And this is kind of Cage's tribute to that. And isn't it interesting when you compare this to the Stravinsky we heard beforehand with sort of the similarities and differences of it. For example, the similarities are very much the attention to pitch and rhythm and the specificity of it and the flow of it, and that it's very precise and easy to dance to in that sense, but it doesn't have a clear rhythm and it's very Apollonian in how it just serves the sound. But Stravinsky's world is very pure and very lush and very, it moves like a wave, and whereas the Cage has moments of sort of abrasive, but it's also in some moments a little starker, a little more frigid and frozen, perhaps more reminiscent of Debussy in that way, or Cage's hero, Satie. Now, we're just going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to move to some of the more experimental music of the 20th century. So, to follow up, we're going to just have a few ads, and then I'll be right back.
We don't need to tell you that Vancouver has a housing problem.
Mass evictions.
Mass rent evictions.
Unfair rent increases.
What happened to rent control and protection from unfair eviction?
If these or other housing matters concern you, you may be interested in joining the Vancouver Tenants Union. For more information, visit tenantsunion.ca.
Do you love being caffeinated? And do you hate that greedy, soulless international conglomerates are succeeding in the cutthroat world of coffee? Sounds like local coffee roasters Trek Coffee is for you. Trek Coffee is 100% indigenous and military veteran owned and operated. Let's keep small businesses thriving. Stop by Sunshine Convenience on 4th, the Super Value on Commercial, or Grocery Checkout in the Nest to pick up some Trek Coffee today.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial. Open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
Join us every Saturday from 8 till noon for Saturday's Edge with your host, Steve Edge, as he guides you on a journey to world and roots music, with African, Latin, and European music in the first half, followed by Celtic, blues, songwriters, and Cajun in the second half.
Welcome back to Breaking Barriers with Jack Campbell Live, Thursdays at 10 a.m. on CITR 101.9 FM radio. Now, today's episode covers the ballet score in the 20th century, and we're about to head in a very different direction, this time with a score that was written in 1958 when it received its premiere at the Royal Opera House. Now, the music is by Hans Werner Henze, and in recent years, Henze's kind of been forgotten. He's developed a bit of a bad reputation, which I think is rather unfortunate because he's a marvelous composer and has a very interesting approach to serialism. Serialism being the technique of everything in the music, but be it the, in most cases, the pitch, but also in this case, it's the rhythms and the dynamics being very mathematically determined. Now, this ballet is called Undine, and it tells the story of a young water nymph who is the desire of a young prince. Now, this ballet was actually quite popular when it was originally created and then fell dormant, but in recent years has been revised, and we're about to hear a recording from 1997 of the London Sinfonietta conducted by the wonderful late conductor and composer Oliver Nussen that was Grammy nominated for Best Orchestral Performance. We're going to listen to the first act of Undine, from the Lento, the Allegretto, and the Andante. Now this is by Hans Werner Henze. Please enjoy. That was music from Hans Werner Henze's ballet, Undine. Now we're going to turn in a very different direction, but very much still the 20th century. This is a ballet that was commissioned by the American Ballet Theatre under the direction of Peter Martin from the jazz musician Wynton Marsalis. They commissioned two different ballets from Marsalis, and it was revolutionary in having an African-American musician write African-American jazz music. George Gershwin had tried to emulate that kind of style in his piece, but this was a revolution at the time. Now, this particular recording is from 1996, and in very much traditional Wynton style, the title of this work is actually the brilliant meter that it is performed in. So we're about to hear jazz, the 6 1/2 syncopated movements, and then it's poetically titled Jubilo, the Scent of Democracy. Now, this ballet by Wynton Marsalis is a commentary on American history, and with the militant marching styles of that music, you can probably think of perhaps the New England colonial origins that references. Now we're going to move to the next movement, which chronicles the, well, not the next movement, but the next I wish to play for you, which is D in the key of F, now the blues, which chronicles the rise of American blues music and is, of course, reflected in the dancing.
Thank you.
And now we're going to have a taste of a movement highlighting another style of traditional American music, ragtime. Now I'd like to end today's episode of Breaking Barriers with the music of two brilliant female composers, but from very different time periods. In 2016, Misty Copeland and Corey Stearns starred at the American Ballet Theatre in Her Notes, which was directed by Jessica Lange, which was her first ballet for the American Ballet Theatre. Now, this featured music that wasn't freshly commissioned for the ballet, which is actually a common thing nowadays. Instead, it featured Das Jahr, the year, September, and March, and April, and June, and all of the other months of the year in the 12-movement suite titled The Year by Fanny Mendelssohn. Now, for a long time, Fanny was just known as the wife of Felix Mendelssohn, who we know from A Midsummer Night's Dream and The Wedding March and his ballet concerto and his ballets and his violin concerto and his octet. But now she is considered perhaps an even better composer than he was, and it's quite obvious in this music how brilliant she was. So here's March from The Year, in this case performed by Loma Scride.
Thank you.
hate to cut this music, beautiful music short, but since we are nearing the end of this broadcast, I'd like to perform one more piece for you. Well, play it for you, I guess. And I'm going to play a marvelous performance of it. And this is the most modern piece we will hear today, this one from 1992. And to me, it really beckons to the direction that music went in. And it's by a recently deceased, brilliant composer, Kaija Saariaho. This is music in seven scenes, and it's called Ma, and it was at the time her largest scale composition. We're going to end with this, and I really appreciate you listening to this episode today. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this, and I'll be back next week with another live broadcast for you. Have a wonderful day, and enjoy this brilliant piece by Kaija Saariaho.
No hablo español. Siempre difícil.
But I think we should start at Don Toliver.
Yes,
so,
I agree.
Don Toliver dropped his third studio album, Lovesick. The deluxe has already dropped, which is kind of strange, but maybe not.
I don't know.
16 tracks with like an A. Every feature is like an A tier. The feature list is kind of crazy.
The feature list is A tier.
Yeah.
The list itself, what the features do, may not necessarily be A tier.
So, I mean, he has James Blake, Lil Durk, Glorilla, Kali Uchis. It says Tisa Korean, but I don't know where he is on that song, to be honest. Then he has a song with Justin Bieber and Future. He's got WizKid. He's got 90s crooner Charlie Wilson, Brent Faiyaz, creative Toro Imoy. And then on the deluxe, he's got Travis and Tizo Touchdown. So, this is like a real tier A rap